Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This is Mego and Shime on WEEI.
Shime and Mego here on Boston Sports Original. WEEI filling in on WEEI Afternoons, taking you up until 6 o'clock this evening, ahead of the beginning of the new WEEI Afternoons program with Fitzy, Hart, and Ted Johnson, which kicks off tomorrow at 2 o'clock. But, Mego, that there was Rap Sheet from over the weekend talking about the Patriots interviewing both Marcus Brady and Thomas Brown for their offensive coordinator position, thus fulfilling the Rooney Rule part of the interview process, and that Josh McDaniels is widely considered the favorite for the job. Do you believe it? Because so to me, that almost, I don't know that that feels like a report from Rap Sheet that he's the leading candidate. It just feels like him making an observation that people seem to think Josh McDaniels is the leading candidate. Do you, I know you're in favor of McDaniels for the offensive coordinator position, but do you actually think he's the favorite to land the job?
Momentarily distracted because the Zuckerberg is on the TV behind your head, and
gotcha.
I'm just trying to figure out what's going on with his hair. It looks like Nana's hairdo, but
it's like a bird's nest.
Yeah, like a bird's nest. Yes, I am in favor of Josh McDaniels. That's who I think they should appoint. I think it's an easy answer, but I think it's the right answer. I think it makes sense for your young quarterback. You see what he did with Mac Jones in his rookie season. Wrote about this for WEEI.com last week if you want to read more in depth. But the report, in quotes, I'd say, that we got on Saturday, I think you're right. It sounds like he's reading the room.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a source that he had that doubled down on that in talking to him, saying it really is still McDaniels. But he didn't really lean heavily that way. It sounds like he's reading the room, reading the landscape, saying McDaniels makes the most sense. And the other candidates that they've interviewed satisfy an NFL rule. And unfortunately, that does point to them kind of going through the Patriots, going through the motions of trying to get to somebody. Like, with those two candidates, you know, I think that...
They're just trying to fulfill the rule again to get it out of the way.
Yeah, well, only because they basically did that with the head coach, and they didn't go through the Rooney Rule for their head coach last season because they hired a coach of color in
Gerard
Mayo.
And he was already in their contract or whatever.
Right, and he was already in the ring contract, and there's all this stuff. But I think that's... It's all to say that I hear that report like you do, like it's reading the room.
Yeah. And so I look at this, though, and we kind of talked about this a little bit on Saturday. I felt like, I mean, the big connection between the two names that they've already interviewed is Frank Reich. So to me, that seems like a guy that they're absolutely going to interview over the next couple days. Clearly, Vrabel likes the Frank Reich system. Otherwise, he wouldn't have interviewed two coaches that were offensive coordinators under Frank Reich, or offensive assistants under Frank Reich. That clearly indicates, like, I feel like that is a giant bat signal that Mike Vrabel is interested in Frank Reich. It makes sense to me. I get it. I would be open to the idea. I think Frank Reich as an offensive coordinator isn't a bad thing. An experienced coach. I think there's a very high floor there. Maybe not necessarily the biggest ceiling, but there is definitely a high floor there, just like with Josh McDaniels. I think they're very much kind of in that same vein. But for me, another name that has popped up, I know Evan Lazar mentioned to keep an eye on Rams offensive coaching staff now that they've been eliminated from the playoffs. Mike LaFleur brother of Matt LaFleur, the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, is the offensive coordinator for the LA Rams. God, I would love them to lure him away and call plays here. That would be awesome. I'm
so
in. Do
you think it's realistic? Because another name that Evan Lazar, so he put out a tweet with five different names from the LA Rams coaching staff. He's saying, keep an eye on these assistants because now that the Rams are out.
Yeah, not a report, but just keep your eye out on them.
Much more free to go out and actually interview in person. And another name is Nick Cayley, who, of course, was a tight ends coach here in New England.
Yep.
Really, really popular coach. Guys like Hunter Henry still speak really highly of him. And the Patriots interviewed Nick Cayley for their offensive coordinator position last year, went back to the Rams instead, obviously. Now he's the tight ends passing game coordinator there. I just wonder, why would Mike LaFleur go from the Rams and an offensive coordinator position there to make a lateral move, at least if you want to consider it lateral on paper, over to the Patriots?
So it's I guess technically it's lateral, but it's also kind of a step forward because he'd be calling plays here. Sean McVay calls every offensive play in L.A. You're never going to call offensive plays if you're the OC in L.A. with the Rams. And so by coming to the New England Patriots, it would allow him to call plays. And if he's successful calling plays with Drake May, you immediately set yourself up for a head coaching
job. Do you want a guy who's a first-time play caller again?
On offense? I'm fine with a first-time play. And so he's not a first-time play caller, by the way. Because he called plays for the New York Jets in 21-22, but that was more of a disaster because of Zach Wilson.
Are we delighted with that performance?
But that was more Zach Wilson than it was Mike LaFleur, I think, personally. And then he was the offensive coordinator for the Rams.
Are the Rams becoming the rehabilitation unit for coaches that
kinda
need to, like, you know, it's also been
the Niners. Too,
it's
yeah.
been the Niners.
Yeah.
So basically, Shanahan's you just so good. Go to McVay and Shanahan,
yep.
and you get right there. And then you go elsewhere and you get, another good job?
Yeah, but they've had a lot of success stories. Kevin O'Connell, great head coach. He's a Sean McVay guy. Matt LaFleur is a Kyle Shanahan guy. Great. Might be one of the more underrated coaches in all of football. Robert Sala went from Kyle Shanahan to the Jets. I think Sala overall was a good coach. I think he kind of got screwed with some
bad
quarterbacks. He got a raw deal. I'm excited for him to get another opportunity at some point in his career. Zach Robinson got promoted to the offensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons this year. Raheem Morris was with the defensive coordinator at the Rams. He got a head coaching gig for the second time. Like, I don't know. Guys are having success coming from those trees.
So sell me on LaFleur, on Mike the Flower.
Yeah, Mike the Flower. So first of all, his brother, like I just said, one of the more underrated coaches in all of football, in my opinion. He comes from a background of working with Kyle Shanahan for years. He worked with Shanahan in the Browns system as an offensive intern, then went to the Falcons with him. He was on that Super Bowl Falcons team with Kyle Shanahan as the offensive coordinator, Matt Ryan's MVP season. He was then the passing game coordinator, wide receivers coach in San Francisco, and the passing game coordinator. So he was with San Francisco for 4 years, one of those Super Bowl runs with Jimmy Garoppolo as quarterback. That might have been pre-Garoppolo. I might be wrong about that. But then went to the New York Jets. Maybe kind of got a raw deal because of Zach Wilson, and then got bounced when they acquired Aaron Rodgers, and he wanted to go work with his buddy Sean McVay anyways because all those guys are friends. And then on top of it, like, I don't know, anybody that grew up with Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay is good at calling plays. It's kind of where I'm at. I just look at all of them, and they're all good. All of them. Every single one of them. They were on Commanders team back in 2011 or 2013, whatever it was, under John Gruden. There was just this whole slew of them.
It was an incredible brain trust.
It was insane. And every single one of them has been good. And every single one of them continues to produce more good coaches around them. So yeah, I would take a random dart throw on Mike LaFleur, for sure.
Is Mike LaFleur the type of coach where you have to sacrifice something about the quarterback development knowledge? Because I do think that it's almost like you're choosing between two different types of guys, where with AVP, he famously now he's the 12th guy that you brought in through your offensive coordinator search last offseason. He also happened to be quite a quarterback guru. And that's what he had going for him, that he works well with quarterbacks. He's a former quarterback. He understands the position and how to bring guys along. And I think he probably added more so to his resume with that than anywhere else in this past season with the Patriots, even though he's almost definitely out of his job, even though he's not reportedly so right now. So I look at that and I go, they went the quarterback route last year with the offensive coordinator, and some of the play calling and the system stuff and the overall organization maybe took a back seat to that. And so is LaFleur a guy who's going to be able to bring along the quarterback? Or is he also a guy who's like, I'm the CEO of the offense and I'm going to hand that over to if T.C. McCartney and whoever else on the quarterback staff stays along? Like, that's going to be your thing over there.
Yeah, I guess that's a fair question. Yeah, I don't know how good he, because you look at his track record, at least, not a great young quarterback development track record. Again, got stuck with Zach Wilson, who I think, you know, you can say what you want. I think he was kind of a hopeless
cause.
Sometimes
you can't make chicken salad.
Nope, no, you can't. And then, like, Jimmy Garoppolo was pretty good in those years with the 49ers. He was on that first Super Bowl, in that first Super Bowl appearance against the Chiefs.
Wouldn't you give his development more credit to Josh McDaniels?
And Kyle Shanahan? Yeah, probably. So I guess it is very fair to question his ability to raise a young quarterback. I get that. I just think play calling wise, I think the ceiling is higher with LaFleur than a guy like Frank Reich or Josh McDaniels.
So Alex Van Pelt, again, I haven't seen reports that he's definitely
and we got
out.
The report just last week of those coaches that
vagary.
Were definitely moving on.
It's just
he was
vagary
not on that
right
list.
Now.
Yeah.
What if they brought in Mike
Give
LaFleur?
Yep.
And retained Alex Van Pelt as some super quarterbacks coach.
Yes. Well, so Andy Hart brought this up on Football Sunday with us one time, mm-hmm. that Van Pelt is the kind of guy that if they said, hey, we'd like to keep you on the staff, but we're going to kind of move you to an offensive assistant or quarterbacks coach role, and we're going to give Mike LaFleur the play calling duties, he may be open to something like that. If that's the case, I think that's like the best case scenario, right?
I do too.
Where you bring in Mike LaFleur.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily Mike LaFleur, but
a guy like him.
Bring in somebody like that.
Young
with a
upstart
system.
Play caller with an experienced system, an effective system in the NFL, the Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan play calling system. You bring in a guy like that who's young, he's learning still, but you keep a guy like Alex Van Pelt, who clearly has had an impact on Drake May, positively, I would say, along with T.C. McCartney, to kind of usher Drake along in his development, and then allow LaFleur to really, or whoever the young upstart is, to call plays and be creative and really kind of allow that offense to flourish. And I think you have a really good opportunity there. Like, that might be best case scenario.
I don't know if it's realistic, but it is interesting because everybody gets so freaked out about continuity from year to year with
Definitely.
These quarterbacks. And if you could have Alex Van Pelt there, and you basically have Alex Van Pelt able to translate compared to what they were doing last year. So if the flower guy says that he wants to do something that doesn't necessarily seem familiar to Drake, then you can have AVP riding shotgun saying, Drake, this is pretty similar to what we did in this situation last year.
Yep.
We're just making this one little tweak here,
yeah.
and it looks really different on its face, but it's not. You can do this, and you've done this before.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely an opportunity. And I would also like to just mention, too, the possible relationship with Vrabel and Mike LaFleur to keep an eye on. Matt LaFleur, Mike's older brother, worked under Mike Vrabel in Tennessee.
True.
And so there may be a connection there if there's an opportunity. I don't know that there is. They haven't even interviewed the guy yet. I'm just saying, like, it's there. There's a tangible connection at the very least.
I still just think the idea, though, of moving laterally, even if you get play calling duties,
yep.
going from the Rams, who make it to the second round of playoffs,
yeah.
to the Patriots, who can basically make it to the second half of the season. Like, I don't, because they can't even keep their offensive line
together. Well, that's if the Rams, the Rams may not have Matthew Stafford next
yes.
year, and so things may change drastically for them as well. Like, they don't have a guy kind of in the wings, in the waiting, ready to assert himself in the quarterback position if Matthew Stafford leaves.
The longer, I will say, and this is obvious, but whatever, the longer the offensive coordinator search takes,
yeah.
the more it feels wide open to me.
Oh, absolutely.
The more
I couldn't
it feels
agree
totally
more.
Wide open, because I bet Josh McDaniels would turn around in a heartbeat and come back and work and work with Drake May.
Of course
he'd be
would.
Like, yeah, of course. I'm
He's like,
I'm
that
local.
Kid looks awesome. I'd love
here.
To come back and work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Work with Vrabel, and I don't know what their relationship is personally, but they know each other.
Yeah.
So I feel like, yeah, maybe as much as we hear McDaniels is the leader in the clubhouse, they're maybe doing an exhaustive search.
Yeah, it seems like they might actually be doing an exhaustive search for the OC, which I think is a good thing. And the other name to note, too, I know Keefe and Jones have liked this this name for offensive coordinator. Another one of those Rams names, Dave Ragone, the quarterback coach. That would be a legitimate upgrade in coaching position if he was to go from there to being the offensive coordinator.
Which would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, but I don't think he has any offensive coordinator. Oh, no, so he was the offensive coordinator with the Falcons for the last 3 years, 21 to 23. I don't know if that's a great track record.
I don't love that.
I don't love that. Granted,
there's not that many of these jobs in the NFL, so you have to get entirely started fair, somewhere.
His quarterbacks were Marcus Mariota and Desmond Ridder.
Okay, but Shime, you keep saying this as if like this is the guy who's going to take Drake May into his sophomore season.
I agree. I know. I'm just saying.
Marcus Mariota looked really good at first.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's another name to keep an eye on. That's all. 617-779.
The big Rangone.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. Let's get the big Rangone to New England. 617-779-7937. If you want to weigh in here on Shime and Mego filling in for WEEI afternoons, but right now David is going to get you caught up with what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending Now is brought to you by Fine Mass Money. Now that it's the new year, I'm sure we all want to take care of those holiday bills. You could have unclaimed money from a forgotten savings account, uncashed payroll checks, or a refund check that never got to you. Go to findmassmoney.gov today. It is a secure website and takes only 30 seconds to search your name. The Bruins defeated the San Jose Sharks earlier today, thanks to some late-game heroics from Charlie Coyle. The final score was 6-3. Coyle scored the game-tying and game-winning goals late in the third period. Empty net goals from Brad Marchand and Elias Lindholm sealed the win for the Bees. The Celtics are getting set to play the Golden State Warriors at 5 p.m. tonight. The Warriors won the last matchup back in November. Draymond Green, Kyle Anderson, and Jonathan Kuminga are all listed as out for this game. Steph Curry is listed as a game-time decision. Drew Peterson is out for the Celtics with a concussion. All-star outfielder Anthony Santander is switching AL East teams after agreeing to a 5-year contract with the Toronto Blue Jays. ESPN's Jeff Passan reports that the deal is worth more than $90 million. Santander hit 44 home runs with the Orioles last season. The Chicago Bears have reached a deal with former Lions offensive coordinator Ben Johnson to become their next head coach. The Lions offense led the league in points per game this season with Johnson at the helm. The college football national championship between Ohio State and Notre Dame kicks off at 7:30 p.m. tonight. You can hear ESPN's call of the game right here on WEEI. Coverage begins at 6:30 p.m. I'm David Azer. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour, the boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, more of Mego and Shine on WEEI.
Shine and Mego with you here on Boston Sports Original WEEI, filling in today for the WEEI afternoon show ahead of the launch of the new program with Fitzy Hart and Ted Johnson. Mego, we were talking about the New England Patriots offensive coordinator position. Wanted to continue our discussion about the New England Patriots here. And we got to talk a lot about this over the weekend, and I'm curious where you still stand on the overall structure of everything right now with the Patriots. With the departure of Robin Glazer and Mike Vrabel's hiring, where are you right now with Vrabel being in charge of everything? Is that kind of still, you're like, yes, he needs to take control, and really, he needs to hire the offensive coordinator he wants. It needs to be less of Elliott, especially with the draft pick and all that stuff. Where are you at right now with the current structure that it seems the Patriots have?
So to catch anybody up who wasn't listening over the weekend or hasn't been tuned into the news of the Patriots structure inside the building, I get it. People are like, are they getting a great wide receiver in free agency? What are they doing in the draft? They're not going to know the ins and outs of everything happening with the executive offices. But Robin Glazer, we did learn over the weekend, was, for whatever reason, whether it was decided for her or she resigned or whatever, she's moving on.
Yep.
So in the middle of next month, probably right after Valentine's Day, she's moving on. She was an executive who was with the Patriots for 18 years, especially over the last year. A lot of buzz around her because she became the special assistant to Gerard Mayo. Mm-hmm. And Mike Reese had the report over the weekend that in addition to
that,
she's basically in charge of the budget.
Mm-hmm. She was the budget lady.
She was the person signing off on capital expenses, on football operations expenses.
Correct.
So not just like, hey, can we afford to build that lighthouse? But things relating directly to the football team. So that's important. We had a little bit more from Albert Breer from Sports Illustrated in the Monday Morning Quarterback column that he wrote about the structure of the Patriots.
Okay.
He talked about Cowden, so Ryan Cowden, who is the vice president of player personnel, who came from the New York Giants and is a buddy of Mike Vrabel. And this is what he writes. He says, let's see. The New York Giants let Cowden out of his contract last Monday, and by the middle of the week, he was meeting with Patriots personnel folks at Gillette Stadium. So basically, like 48 hours later, he's at Gillette.
Nice.
He's meeting with everybody. Now he's under executive vice president of player personnel, Elliott Wolf, but the two know each other, which is at least a start here. So he reports to Wolf. He says, Brute writes, I also think that Vrabel will have the kind of juice to push ownership, which was clearly feeling the heat of back-to-back 4-13 seasons, reaching fast for the narrative-turning PR win that was hiring a new coach to make the real changes and additions necessary to take an outdated, past-its-prime football operation into present-day NFL. One area I've heard they're already adding to is on the player development side, a staff where the Patriots had next to nothing.
Does that...
What are we doing? I'm sorry. Last year's staff had next to nothing in player development.
Well, does that lend credence more or really kind of reflect on Elliot Wolf's comments? I forget who it was to exactly, but when he said, "Oh yeah, our players didn't really."
McKenna from Fox Sports.
That's who it was. He didn't really. Our players didn't really develop as well as we had thought.
Yeah, he's like, we thought we were getting Jalen Polk, who's a plug and play guy, and it turns out nobody can develop anybody into anything over here.
It's because they had nobody to develop him, apparently.
I don't know. This might be a lot of people working together for the first time in the last year. No, to put this message out there is what I'm saying. Perhaps they're getting their messaging straight in a real way. I don't know. I don't know who Albert Breer talks to. But the idea that they didn't have player development personnel on staff when you're bringing in your quarterback as the number three overall pick last year, and you have Elliot Wolf telling the media that the idea is you're going to do the Green Bay way of things, where you're going to draft and develop and reinvest. What?
You don't have anybody to develop. How does that work? Make it make sense.
Physician, heal thyself. Hey, rookie. Develop yourself. Yep. What are we doing?
Go figure it out, Drake May. You got this. You can do it yourself.
So Breer has a little bit more here.
Yourself how to count.
I just thought that little piece was galling. How do you do that? How do you have that as your structure last year? If that's true, that is an incredible failure. Breer writes, as for the structure, my understanding is that it will remain the same for now. Both Wolf and Vrabel will report directly to ownership. So Vrabel's reporting directly to the Crafts. Wolfs are reporting directly to the Crafts. Not a lot of crossover there as we sit here today. Which
Vrabel
is
said he was meeting with Elliot a bunch of times.
Yeah, to work together, not for one another.
Oh, okay.
Not for one another. So they're like they're on parallel tracks.
Got it.
No intersection except for collaboration.
Okay.
Nobody's accountable one or
so
to
no
the
one
other.
Guy's in charge.
Exactly. Yeah. He writes, my sense is ownership really likes the changes that Wolf has started implementing.
Of course they do.
Modernizing the scouting system and building out the football operation. And so that will continue. And during Vrabel's time with Tennessee's Chad Brinker, who was very close with Wolf. God, this is so incestuous. Who is very close with
Welcome
Wolf.
Welcome to football.
From their decade together in Green Bay, he learned the Green Bay Packers grading system, and I heard he really likes it.
Yawn.
Okay, so now the narrative that's coming out of Foxborough, whether you want to believe it or not, is Elliot Wolf is actually a really talented guy. And it seems like he had his hands tied last year, and that's why the personnel side didn't look the way it was supposed to look. And also, they didn't have player development on staff. So maybe even if some of the guys from the last draft are pretty good, they weren't able to be developed. Maybe Jalen Polk does have the best hands in the league.
He doesn't. I can assure you he doesn't. My question would be, okay, so you didn't have player development people. Then why did... So Drake May is just so good he didn't need player development people, but everybody else isn't good enough to compete at all?
He had AVP.
Oh, got it.
I guess that's what we've learned.
I guess that tracks. Okay. So
my takeaway from a lot of this.
So Scott Peters stunk. That's why he just got a job with the Bengals. Got it. So Caden Wallace, Leighton Robinson were let down by Peters. Okay. Who is the receivers coach again?
Hughes. Tyler Hughes.
No longer with the team.
And the assistant receivers coach has gotten to.
So it's their fault that Jalen Polk wasn't a plug and play player. If you say he's plug and play, he shouldn't need development then, right?
That's a good point. That is the language that he used.
Yeah, that is his words were plug and play.
Well, I think what he was saying, we thought Jalen was going to be a plug and play guy.
Turns out
he needed development, and oops, we don't have development personnel. So
no, we just
tough.
Hired coaches just to be there. That's cool. Okay, so that's helpful. Oh man, that sounds like really really smart business. I'm glad he's still in charge.
Isn't this all of it? Isn't all of this sound like it's trying to make Elliot look as great and capable and full of promise as possible?
Yeah, of course.
Doesn't that seem to be the point of any messaging that's coming out?
Robert Kraft literally said in his press conference, we really like Elliot's grading system. Who gives an F about his grading system? I can, Robert, you can hire me. I'll grade the entire draft class, which I basically already do on my own anyways because I'm such a bleeping nerd.
What grade would you have given Ladd McConkey last offseason?
Oh, I would have taken him.
Yeah.
I would have taken him where you were instead of trading down.
Give him the grade of taken. He's get a Liam Neeson grade.
I could have posted my big board in the Patriots draft room and played pin the tail on the donkey with it and picked better players than he did in rounds 2 through 7.
You could have like chugged 3 beers in a dizzy bat and then run over to the chart and hit Ladd McConkey at 34.
Bill O'Brien knows. That's why he's on Shime Island. He gets it. But clearly, the crash, hey, you need a new grading system? Give me a call. I'd be happy. It's very simple. Good, bad, will be awesome, might suck. Very simple. Like, it's not a hard system. I can figure it out. Blue chip player. We can nail that one down. That's the top one. And then everything else. I'll set up a real good system for you. It'll be really simple. And we'll just put everybody in categories. And I can have just as good a hit rate as Elliot freaking Wolf.
Might suck just has a little skull and crossbones emoji next to it.
Yep. This is definitely do not draft. That is just going to be in giant red letters. Do not draft. Go nowhere near this player. I break it down real easy for them. I'll even color code it entirely. I have no problem. I got a lot of people that know how to use Excel spreadsheets really good. I can get them to help me.
We're led to believe by all the reporting that's come out over the last week or so and by the comments that Vrabel has made. Mike Vrabel talked to Tommy Kern and said, basically there were things that were holding Elliot back last year. So now we're going to get the full Elliot.
Like
Elliot,
what?
Like, they're going to let Elliot be Elliot. Well, they
let
Robin Glazer's walking.
Was she holding it back in the draft?
That's what I'm asking. Do you think that Robin Glazer had her hands in the draft? Do you think that she had it in free agency?
She was the budget lady.
Seems like the budget lady.
In free agency, I would say, maybe she hamstrung Elliot a little bit when it came to spending money in free agency. That tracks. I get that.
But they keep talking up this grading system.
It's dog water. It doesn't matter.
They didn't give Elliot the title until after the draft last year.
They put the entire...
Which was really weird.
Sure, but he was still the one doing the drafting.
Do you think that there's a part of what the messaging is that the scouting work was being done, that was obviously being done under Belichick before they had Elliott in place there, and so they were hurt? Are they still holding on to the Belichick thing where they were hurt by Belichick's scouting reports and scouting work and that hampered Elliott going into the 2024 draft? But now Elliott's had a full year of this and he has his scouts out there and he's a scout at heart. And so guess what? He's going to go get you the best guys this year with his grading system.
But again, like, even if you were hurt by the Bill Belichick stuff, you could have just thrown out all of it.
Well, but
everything.
Then you'd start from scratch and you'd be way behind. And they also didn't give Elliott the title.
It was so historically good of a draft. They could have swung on anybody and had a better hit rate than they did.
But they did just like anybody. And look what they ended up with.
But but Elliott was the one that picked. Like, I guess that's kind of where I'm at, is like, ultimately, Elliott was the one that submitted the draft choice. Like, he has to have some culpability in this. You can't just say it was all Robin Glazer. You can't blame Bill Belichick for having left 2 years ago and left you in the wind when the draft.
They're
the
blaming some ghost. That's what they're doing right now.
What are you, Sam Darnold?
No,
stop.
Somebody is a ghost. It's either Belichick's scouting program or Belichick himself. Or it's something having to do with Glazer, or it's somebody else that is no longer involved or has been demoted to such an effect that they are not part of the Patriots personnel stuff, because they're saying Elliott's got so much potential. He's got a grading system from Green Bay that Mike Vrabel, who's extremely intelligent and kind of a hardo, absolutely really likes, according to Albert Breer. He's all about it. And so everybody's on board together, moving in this new direction. And we're going to let Elliott be Elliott. And you guys should be excited about that because it's going to point you in the right direction.
Is Matt Groh still on the staff?
Yes, he was. Yes, I saw him at Vrabel's introductory press conference. But then again, Robin Glazer was there too. Technically, she's still on the staff, but she's leaving in February.
Well, maybe that is part of the issue, because that's also the guy who said Tyquan Thornton was great. We really want fast players. Let's go get Tyquan Thornton instead of So, like, look, I don't trust Elliott Wolff as far as I can throw him. Like,
well,
it just doesn't.
He hasn't really given you reason to. But
no.
They're trying to sell you on his potential.
I don't care about his potential.
They're saying he didn't get to reach his potential last year for whatever ghosts were keeping him from there.
Yep.
And now, can't you buy into the possibility? Even Vrabel is on board. He said that they have inside jokes and he likes the grading system as he's familiar with it from Green Bay. So you should be excited.
Yeah, my biggest swing and miss of 2024 was buying in on the potential of Anthony Richardson. And look how that one turned out. I'm good on buying on potential right now. I'd rather at least some sort of a proven product. Show me there's any reason to believe that you're any good at your job, because that entire draft class, and again, Drake May, you don't get credit for, because anybody at three should have and would have picked Drake May. You don't get credit for that. So then any other reason in that draft, show me any positive. There is none. There's none. There's nothing I can get behind.
Could be Layden Robinson. Could be. Could be somebody.
Could it?
Could be.
Could it? A guy couldn't stay on the field okay at left guard?
The biggest issue is the receivers, because that was an unforced
horrendous error,
and you end up with
so
Jalen Polk and Javon Baker, and then
Juju Smith-Schuster, and like a week later, he's catching 100 yards for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bad look overall.
But I mean,
with the wide receivers. But that's why Tyler Hughes had to go.
Yeah, sure. And that's fine, and I get that. But, like, he didn't hamstring Elliott Wolff. Elliott Wolff was the one that made those selections. And so for me, it's like, I don't trust him. I don't know why you're trying to sell me. I feel like I'm in a conversation with a used car dealer and I can't get away. Like, he just has my phone number. He has my text. Like, he's texting me every single minute. Like, did you know Elliott Wolff's really good at this? He has a really cool grading system. He calls and leaves a voicemail to me and they're like, hey, did you know Elliott Wolff? He's a really smart guy. He loves the way
Green Bay did push texts.
Yeah, the push to text. You can reply no to stop. I reply no, and they still don't stop. Elliott Wolff, he's from the Green Bay system. They had a really good job of really kind of growing, cultivating talent from draft picks. Oh, God, I'm so sick of it. Why don't you actually draft somebody that's good?
It's an unforeseen pivot from the Patriots for me, because I really thought Vrabel would get in and say, Elliott, you're demoted to scout. Elliott, I've got Ryan Cowden in here. If you want to hang around, that's cool, but you're not going to be running personnel. My guy is going to be doing it. And I still think that might happen.
Maybe,
but I do think it's really interesting that the messaging that we're getting out of Gillette right now, out of Foxborough right now, is Elliott's actually really great. He's been held back. Everybody's on board with Elliott. He's got a lot of potential. He's not reporting to Vrabel. He's reporting directly to the Crafts.
That bugs me.
And you should be excited.
That, I think that's the biggest thing that bugs me, is the fact both Wolf and Vrabel will report directly to ownership, which indicates to me, I don't know if Vrabel has final say on those draft picks. I don't know if Vrabel can just be like, no, I want to take the guy that reminds me of A.J. Brown and Deebo Samuel instead of taking your guy who has a really good relative athletic score. I'll take that guy. Like, I trust Vrabel's eyes and football know-how way more than I trust whatever Elliott Wolff has done. And so that really irks me, that all of a sudden it's like, no. Yeah, Vrabel and Elliott, they're on, like, equal planes, both reporting to ownership. That is, I don't like that at all.
Today. That's the structure today. We'll see. Ryan Cowden's in there, so he could throw a wrench.
Oh, God. 617-779-7937. Shyman Mego filling in on WEEI afternoons today. Oh,
you know what's coming up next.
What's that, Mego?
The return of Megsplaining.
Look at that. We got Megsplaining coming up next right here on Boston Sports Original WEEI.
You're listening to Mego and Shyme on WEEI.
Welcome back. Mego and Shyme with you up until 6 p.m. Your brand new WEEI afternoon show will start tomorrow.
Yes, they will. Fitzy Hart and Ted Johnson, baby.
We can cut the music now. Thank you. That just used to be my intro music for a little segment I used to do. Not exactly at this time.
You didn't
sometimes
want to let it breathe like Greg?
No. Sometimes the music beds underneath like distract me because, again, I have debilitating ADHD and I'm like, I just want to listen to the music.
Yeah, I get that.
This is Megsplaining. So this is where I used to talk about things that aren't sports, and then, you know, like 5 minutes in, people would lose their minds and say, why aren't we talking about sports?
Generally.
And today I wanted to talk about something that has been bothering me for the last year or so.
Okay.
But particularly when I look at the forecast for this week, because we have the snow that came in last night. I find the snow pretty manageable, mostly because my husband dug my car out today, and that was really
nice. Shout out to that's a good husband.
And I have all-wheel drive. And it wasn't a crazy amount of snow, but the forecast this week, it's basically going to be 5 degrees every day.
Oh, it's going to be brutal. The next 2 days are going to be miserable.
And the worst is when you talk to people and then they go, yeah, but have you seen the wind chill? And you're like, the wind chill is going to be awful. I don't know. Wind chill's never a good thing.
I need a scarf is what I need.
Okay. Quick aside. How do you feel about men in scarves?
Like when it's 5 degrees outside, totally okay. In general, like you're going out to a bar or restaurant, don't wear a scarf.
As an accessory?
Yeah, no, don't wear a scarf. You don't need an ascot or a scarf.
What if you have like a really nice scarf draped around your neck, but it's not fully looped and swooped? It's just draping.
Fine with that because I actually have a really nice, like a really nice jacket that has one that's kind of like sewn in at the top, like on the collar so that it comes down on both sides. But like, I don't like wrap it around myself or anything. So
okay. Interesting. Yeah. I haven't seen the jacket. I'll have to see it. Yeah. What I'm thinking about is hot tubs. Okay. And I...
Wait, hold on. Hot tubs?
Yes. Like jacuzzis, like outdoor hot tubs.
Okay.
So there's
outdoor hot tubs in 5 degree weather?
Yeah, that's the best time to have a hot tub.
Okay, explain. Please.
So this is
a big part
of like ski culture where when you do your après ski and you go get your shot ski on, you get like a hot toddy at the lodge or something.
Yep.
But then you put on your snow hat and you climb into a hot tub. And you just sit amongst the snow. And the best is like then when you get little crystals on the bottom of your hair, little ice crystals, and you just lean back.
But your whole body is steaming.
But you're warm, but it's cold outside. It's the absolute best.
This is a thing people do?
Yes. And my in-laws used to have an outdoor hot tub, and they ended up getting rid of it because they said it just is too expensive. Like nobody uses it except for you guys. And so we'd go out to where they live in Massachusetts and we'd just chill in the hot tub. And now I've been looking for a hot tub and there's nowhere that has hot tubs that you can just go for the day. The closest thing I found were a couple of hotels which were exceedingly expensive in Boston.
That tracks.
And one of them is in the Seaport and they do a day pass. So you can do a resort pass where you go get to use their spa. And that includes a hot tub.
But it's not outdoors.
No, but at least it's a hot tub.
Okay.
And as far as I know, it's not outdoors. At least it's a hot tub. The resort pass is $65 a day, which is kind of a lot for just sitting in a hot tub. But I thought maybe that's something I would treat myself once a month when it's the deep, dark winter.
Not too bad.
And it's 5 degrees outside. I get to go chill out in a hot tub. It's also probably good for you. And the resort passes are all sold out. Like the only ones that are available are on Tuesday afternoons. I can't be spending my Tuesday afternoon when I'm supposed to be working and
in a hot
working
tub.
For WEI, just paying $65 to go sit in a hot tub in the Seaport.
Interesting. I cannot tell you accurately the last time I was in a hot tub.
Why are people so into the cold plunge? And they're resistant to the hot tub.
No.
The hot tub's good for you, too. Like, what about the hot springs and, like, all the hot rushing
baths
and
stuff? I would love to go to a hot spring. That sounds awesome. I'm so into that. I've just never been. And, like, I don't know a ton of people with hot tubs. I never have. I honestly think the last time I was in a hot tub was when I was, like, 17.
What were you doing in that hot tub at 17?
It was a hot tub party. There was a lot of us. There was, like, 7 of us.
So aren't you surprised that there aren't more health clubs not a health club because that makes it sound like there's a fitness center.
So like
not like a straight up gym, but
why doesn't Sweat House also have hot tubs? Like they have cold plunges and saunas.
Everybody's into saunas and the cold plunge.
Yep.
And I don't want to do that. I just want to sit in a hot tub. I want to read a book in a hot tub, get out of the hot tub, feel cold again, and then get back in the hot tub and feel good.
Interesting.
It's like the reverse of a cold plunge. I need like a hot simmer. That's
hot
what I need.
Simmer. You need to boil.
Yeah. And then I talk to sometimes I talk to people about this and they're like, well, that's gross. Like people don't want to go sit in a public hot tub. It's gross.
Also true. I would not want to sit with like 4 strangers
like
in a
you're
hot
not,
tub.
They don't trust the cleanliness.
Yeah. Like how would you limit who sits in the hot tub? Like if you're just renting it out, you're going to get in there and there's like 10 other people in the hot tub?
Yeah, you only have a certain capacity. Maybe you have like 5 hot tubs in one facility.
Yep.
And you limit 4 to a tub.
Okay, like so you can have 20 people like per hour. Okay.
I mean, we go.
You sell it by the half hour.
We go to hotels everywhere where there's outdoor jacuzzi hot tub setups. Why does it work there and it can't work at a place where people purely go there? Maybe you get, you know, like a steam room and you do, you can do your cold plunge and everything. Nobody respects or invests in the hot tub anymore. And it's kind of ruining my winter.
So a couple texts in, 857, fat people don't use hot tubs. Generally accurate. I don't use hot tub very often. I haven't used a hot tub most of my life. I'm not as fat as I used to be, but thanks for waking up my 80.
Why don't larger people want to use a hot tub?
Nah, it's a confidence thing, I think. You don't want to get in a hot tub with a t-shirt on.
Why? Who cares?
Because you look like a dork.
Okay.
As a former very fat person. Yeah, you're right. Like I would
normally,
but like swimming in a pool, like I would do that in private, like or with friends who I don't really care as much how they see me because they're my friends and I love them and it doesn't matter. But like, I'm not going to like some public pool and jumping in like it's.
You know when you sit in the hot tub that you're submerged in the hot tub.
Yeah,
you can't see somebody's body really.
Yeah, but
in the
process of getting in the hot tub is a nightmare. 207 text worth. 774 text. Hot tubs are bacteria cesspools.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm worried that people have the wrong view of hot tubs.
Interesting. Okay.
Where I would not sneer at a public hot tub. If someone said there's a place here where you can get, they have a hot cocoa bar, they have 5 hot tubs, they're monitored and cleaned, and you can pay $20 to hang out for 2 hours in the hot tubs, and we also have s'mores pits. I'm just making this up as we
s'mores.
Go.
I am a big s'mores guy.
What about if you had, what's the thing with the melted cheese?
Oh, fondue.
Yeah, maybe we have a fondue bar on the other side for people who have more of a savory taste.
Yep.
Like, this could be, that would be a
money
spot.
Maker. I have an investor for you. There's one person on this planet I know who loves hot tubs more than anybody else I've ever met in my entire life.
Okay.
Jermaine Wiggins. Jermaine Wiggins is the biggest hot tub fan, aficionado, whatever.
Why do you know this when you say you haven't been in a hot tub since you were 17?
Because we talk about it on the show quite frequently. Greg, Courtney, and Wiggy all went to Ireland for the Greg Hill Foundation golf tournament a couple years ago. And Wiggy's biggest highlight of the entire week in Ireland, staying in a castle, was being able to use the hot tub and like the pressure.
That would definitely be my highlight. Like, you could take me to County Cork and say, Megan, this is where your ancestors are from. We found the exact plot of land that they herded their sheep on. And this is where you're from. And I'd still be more excited about the hot tub.
Really?
No doubt.
Oh, man.
Yes.
You get excited for hot tubs like I get excited for dessert.
You get in the hot tub at night when there's piles of snow around and you got clear skies above you and you can see the little dipper. Maybe you pour yourself like a little glass of wine and you sit out there. Doesn't get better. That is like the only way to get through winter.
Interesting. I've never done this. I've never experienced this. 617-779-7937.
If you know where there are hot tubs in the greater Boston area that are accessible, I even went on Reddit and somebody had recently posted this on
Trolling
Boston
Reddit.
I love Reddit. I went on Boston Reddit and somebody posted a question and all the respondents and moderators on Reddit got really mad because they said, somebody asks this every 2 weeks. There are many threads that you can find about Boston's lack of hot tubs.
So it's a Boston thing.
There is a demand there.
Maybe if you go to New Hampshire where there's more skiing and more mountains, do you think you could find more hot tubs?
Yeah, but guess what? I can't just go for an afternoon up to New Hampshire and hang out in a hot tub.
Fair point. All right, 617-779-7937. Are you with Mego? Does there need to be more accessible hot tubs in the city of Boston? We'll get back into sports as well. All that coming up here. It's Shime and Mego filling in on WEEI Afternoons.